ABC AFL Daily is the best conversation in footy. Hosted by Corbin Middlemass and Ben Cameron, alongside regulars like Mick Malthouse.
I mean, I don't remember too many games, but it's one of the ones I remembered. It was just that physical.
Bob Murphy.
Where do you guys get off thinking you can pick and choose?
And more, it keeps you in the loop with the biggest stories in the AFL and the number one analysis in the game. ABC AFL Daily, 5 eps a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
These young boys are learning on the go. You know, it's very quick education and lessons that we are learning. And I'm seeing them grow as young men. I'm seeing them grow as players. And I'm seeing them mature. And I'm seeing them enjoying and embracing the greatest challenge of all, which is a World Cup. It doesn't get greater than this.
Tony Popovich. And you know what? It's not just the players getting an education. This is the manager's first World Cup in charge. So what lessons might he take from the USA as he readies to pick his team for Paraguay? Because there's a bit doing. Right wing back Jacob Italiano is a surprise out through injury. Who's coming in? Matt Leckie. We know he's also hurt. Three big name players are vying for that slot. There's a lot to ponder. So we're heading to camp in California to do some pondering with David Bashir from SBS before we talk to Amanda Shalala about the most diverse World Cup in history in Trump's America. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. David Bashir is the lead caller for SBS at this Football World Cup. He's in California. He spoke to Tony Popovich and the Paraguayan camp today. Dave, the big news, Jacob Italiano is out. What happened and who comes in?
Yeah, good question, Patrick. He had an abductor injury at training, the extent of which we're not quite sure, but he's definitely missing this match.
Firstly, Jacob unfortunately won't be available. Yeah, I think it's an abductor injury. We don't know the extent of it as yet. We'll do some further tests in the coming days, but he won't be available for this game.
And we know already Matthew Leckie's out with a hamstring injury, so who comes in? I think he's probably thinking Jason Guerra at right back. He's also got Kai Truand as an option, and then really left field maybe as Izbaich as an inverted wing back, but probably not going to go down that track, I wouldn't have thought. And for Leckie, everybody's hoping Nestori Irinkunda starts, and also Connor Metcalf as well. Whether that happens, who knows? It's just almost impossible to predict what he's going to do. You know, one thing's for sure, Paraguay defend well. They were very resolute against Turkey in the last match. So there is a school of thought to say be positive from the start, try to score early and then draw them out, you know. But, you know, easier said than done because they're an excellent team.
It's kind of a surprise to think that Jacob Italiano missing this game would be such a headache. Can you maybe help our audience understand why that right wing back position is just such a crucial cornerstone for the Socceroos lineup?
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. It's his system, his preferred wing back system. And if you've noticed on the other side, Jordi Bosz, who's usually a very potent attacking weapon against the better quality opposition of the World Cup, has not been deployed as advanced as he usually is. So the wingbacks are really important because they protect those wide areas. And as we know, against the United States, we're a little susceptible in those areas. Jacob basically has had an excellent tournament. You know, he's playing in the top flight of Austrian football. He's coming up against more credentialed opponents than he'd normally face. And he's done really well. And I think it's been a steep learning curve for him. That position is there to get opportunities in attack, but primarily under Popovich's system, to be very secure at the back. Jason Guerra knows the system. He's played under Popovich at Melbourne Victory. You know, he's an experienced player. So let's just wait and see if he comes in, if he can do as good a job.
As you say, Matt Leckie opening the door for potentially Nestori Irinkunda. I suppose Christian Volpato or Connor Metcalf would be the others in the mix for that inclusion. How are you seeing that attacking sort of contingent?
It's a really vexed question because it does depend, you know, like Gustavo Faro, the Paraguayan coach. I think he was playing ducks and drakes today, to be honest. He was saying that, you know, virtually saying that they'd be happy with a point to qualify them at least in third place. The point's good enough for us to finish second, the Socceroos to finish second, but I'm not sure that's the case. I think he's a lot more ambitious than that. And I would like personally to see Nestori start with Connor Metcalf. It was a very good combination against Turquia. We lacked that type of potency, even to hold the ball up, because we know Connor Metcalf's an excellent technical player, and, you know, Nestori Iraconda's got that pace in behind, always, you know, warrior defences, and they're not overly quick in the centre of their defence. So I reckon, look, I don't know what he's going to do, but we've all been, the whole SBS crew have been discussing it all day, right? Probably for a couple of days has been an obsession. What is he going to do? I know Luke Wilkshire, my co-commentator, would like to see both Nestori and Connor Metcalf start with Moture, because that really does provide a lot of threat. And we, you know, we know we can keep a shape at the back, and obviously, you know, with O'Neill and, you know, Ocon Jr. perhaps marshalling the midfield, it is a pretty secure space that for Australia.
I was really interested to hear Tony Popovich at his press conference speaking about the team growing and learning.
We're growing day by day, even quicker than I anticipated. So I'm very confident that the boys are well prepared, excited for the opportunity. We're in this position because we deserve to be here.
I'm interested in your view as to how much you feel like the manager is learning and evolving, because this is his first World Cup pulling the strings as well.
Yeah, it's a good question. He's played at a World Cup. He's played under Gus Hiddink and learnt from very good coaches as well. Yeah, he's an interesting personality, Tony Popovich. He doesn't ever give a suggestion that he has made an error of judgment, put it that way. But I think privately, maybe a different story. So, yes, I think it is a learning curve for him, because he would never have coached a team that's gone under the pressure of a host nation in the previous match. So from that point of view, tick for a new learning for both him and his players, and also what works and what doesn't for a young group. It's our second youngest team at a World Cup. So, you know, from that point of view, he's on a steep learning curve as well.
I did enjoy him reminding the media today that the last time, I think, the Socceroos played Paraguay, he was on the scorer sheet.
Yeah, maybe when I saw that we've got Paraguay, it's a bit personally something a little special. I also scored in my last game. I didn't score many, so I have to remind you of that. Also for Ale, that I did score against Paraguay.
Good to see that he's got a decent level of ego, Dave.
Yeah, I think it also shows how much it means to him to play for Australia. The badge means a lot, and it's the first time it's an all-Australian coaching staff at a World Cup, the first time a member of the Golden Generation has led Australia the national team. So there's a lot of firsts in that respect. But, yeah, he's got a keen sense of history. He's also got a keen sense of the occasion as well.
It's a wonderful challenge. That's what we're here for. And, you know, we love the position we're in, that, you know, we can go through to the next stage, to the knockout stages, and we know it's in our hands, and we know what a win does for us tomorrow.
So let's just hope, Patrick, he brings the best out of his players for tomorrow, because it's going to be a pretty searching World Cup test, I reckon.
I'll tell you, one person who's got a fair bit of World Cup experience is your good self. I think this is your fifth World Cup. I'm just wondering, for someone who's seen all the different iterations of Socceroos team, how this one compares to you, because they've all got kind of different personalities.
I actually go back even further back. Oh, I don't know, 1998, we didn't qualify, but I was there. I'm just thinking about the Australian, you know, teams I've seen. Obviously, 06, I was there, but not for SBS, and I was there as a supporter doing a little bit of reporting. That was the golden generation for mine, and they were managed very tightly by Gus Hiddink. He had that typical sort of imposing sort of personality over the team. You could argue that Ange Postecoglou had the same type of approach in 2014 in Brazil. South Africa was different because Pim Verbeek was under a lot of pressure after he, you know, coughed up that first result against Germany. So they've got all different qualities and different ways of going about it. I think 4 years ago, Arnie was the quintessential, you know, player's manager, in a way that he managed his group out of a very awkward situation in the opening game. He empowered the players. All of the big managers have different ways of going about it. But, you know, Tony Popovich is possibly more the Gus Hiddink style, I would think.
You would no doubt feel like the level of excitement that's building in Australia, you know, Fed Square, Tumbalong Park, live sites packed, the inevitable conversation about whether or not everyone should have the day off.
I'm pretty confident they will capture the moment, whether they have a day off or not. I'm sure every Australian will be somewhere watching the Socceroos and watching these boys perform and be very proud of them.
This looms as an all-time Socceroos clash. Like, how does it feel to be the guy soundtracking that?
I don't try to think about it that much. Like, I know it sounds a bit odd, but you've still got a game of football to call, and you try to just discuss it with the team. They're all passionate football people that we're travelling with. They always have been. And you just try to get in the moment. Obviously, I've never played at a World Cup. I've just observed it and commentated it. So you're leaning very much into what Luke Wiltshire has to say about the experience. You know, it's always a privilege to call the Socceroos at a World Cup because they do play with a lot of passion and desire. You just try to probably get it right. Don't try to over-commentate and just let the audience have a say as well. Because remember, if you're always at an audience as a commentator, you're probably not doing your job the way it should be done, I reckon.
We've been loving the coverage. It's been a hell of a ride. It feels like we've got a few more twists and turns to come. David Bashir, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate your analysis a day out from the game.
Thanks, Patrick. All the best, mate.
The ABC's Amanda Shalala is in the United States covering this tournament. Amanda, you've written about this being the most diverse World Cup ever from a player's point of view. Can you maybe break down how and why that's the case?
So, Stucky, around a quarter of the playing cohort for this World Cup were born in a country different to the one that they're representing. And then there are many, many more, we don't know the exact number, who are second or third generation migrants. So it's this fascinating evolution of the men's World Cup, whereas when it started, maybe that number was around 10 to 13%. So it has been, you know, 100 years or so. So it has progressed a little bit in that time. And I spoke to Ben Brindle from the Migration Observatory at the University of Oxford to get his insights around this because he's been doing a lot of research around it. And it was super fascinating to understand how and why this is the case and whether it actually makes a difference as well. That was one of my questions is, well, does it make a team perform better if they are more diverse? And he said there are studies which suggest that is the case. You will perform better at international tournaments if you have that mix because of a bigger playing pool, because of the different physical attributes that players will bring, and also the different systems that they have grown up in as well. There's a really big mix from the big name countries. You'll see it more in the second and third generation migrants. And for some of those smaller emerging nations, it is very much reliant on their recruiting strategies to get players with lineage from that country to bring them over.
What I found really intriguing was that it wasn't necessarily the sort of diversity that you might expect. So we see the African influence on major nations like France, England, even Australia. But what surprised me when I looked at it a little bit was the lack of homegrown talent, if you could call it that, in nations like Haiti, DR Congo, even Cabo Verde. It's maybe not always the way you think it's going to manifest.
So in those countries, yeah, like England, France, it is very much influenced by that colonial and post-colonial migration. And so that's why we see those sorts of links, but more so with those second, third generation migrants. So looking at some of the examples, DR Congo, 85% of their players were born outside of the country. Curaçao, the smallest nation to ever qualify for the Men's World Cup, all but one player was born in the Netherlands. It was a former Dutch colony. Morocco, you have 19 of the 26-man squad born overseas. So when you look at some of those examples, let's look at Morocco in particular and the others to a lesser extent. They have a very aggressive scouting and recruiting strategy. They'll have scouts embedded all throughout Europe, and they are actively seeking players who have any sort of link or heritage to that country. And it helps some of those countries where they maybe don't have the same facility or resources or money as the big countries to develop the talent. So they tap into the European system, for example, where these players have come through some of the best football schools in the world, and then they can take them when they've already been primed and then put them out on the national stage. One of my favourite stories, though, is Roberto Lopez from Cabo Verde. He is from Ireland originally. He has a dad who has Cabo Verde heritage, and he got a LinkedIn message in 2018. It was in Portuguese. He can't speak Portuguese, and he ignored it. He was working at a bank in Dublin. He thought, okay, that's a bit weird. Then 9 months later, they sent this message again, but this time in English, and it was from the Federation saying, hey, we found out you have some heritage. Do you want to play football for us? And now here he is playing at a World Cup.
Incredible to think that good things actually do happen on LinkedIn. Given the diversity of the playing cohort, is there an irony at all given the United States' current landscape around immigration?
Yes, we know the current landscape here. I've been spending a lot of time the past couple of weeks in Texas, which is Republican heartland. A World Cup can really provide a unique opportunity to have people from all different countries and cultures to mix and to provide a bit of cultural exchange and show that, hey, yes, we might have differences, but we're all humans. Even though we have different beliefs and customs, we can have fun together. We can have this shared collective experience. So the experts I've spoken to have said that actually is incredibly powerful and shouldn't be underestimated in a climate, in a country that has been very, very divided. There are many that are hopeful that the effects will last long beyond the tournament when it finishes in a few weeks.
Amanda Jalala, thanks for this look into pretty surprising story. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tucky.
Headlines. Brazil has topped Group C after breaking the hearts of the Tartan Army with a 3-0 win over Scotland. Vinicius Jr. was the man for the South Americans. He scored 2 goals and had 1 disallowed as he continued the trend of big names shining big. He has 3 goals for the tournament so far. They'll now play either the Netherlands, Japan or Sweden, depending on the results from that group. Scotland might make it through as one of the best third-place teams. In the same group, Morocco beat Haiti 4-2 as they secured second spot. Group B, earlier, Switzerland, they beat co-host Canada 2-1 and Bosnia and Herzegovina thumped Qatar 3-1 to end their miserable tournament. That group finished Switzerland, Canada, Bosnia and Herzegovina and Qatar. And finally in Group A, Mexico topped the standings after beating Czechia. South Korea beaten by Bafana Bafana, aka South Africa, in Mexico. That means the Africans rose to second and South Korea slumped to third. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special, produced by Poppy Penny.